you do that.
So I will now call our
second case today, which is 99-1441, State v. Margaret H. And Jennifer L. Abbott will address the court first, representing Margaret H. Ms. Abbott.
Good morning. My name is Jennifer Abbott, and I represent the petitioner in this case, Margaret H. Sitting next to me is my partner, Jeffrey Kingsley. If it please the court, counsel, by brief way of background, this case arises out of a trial court's denial of a termination of parental rights petition and a subsequent appeal by the guardian ad litem. The Court of Appeals ruled that the trial court's finding that it would be harmful to sever the relationship between the children and their grandmother was not in their best interest, and that finding was clearly erroneous. In essence, the Court of Appeals based its decision upon uncontroverted testimony at the trial that a severance would not occur because Deborah G., the prospective adoptive parent, testified that she would allow some sort of visitation to occur between the twins and their biological family. Section 48.4263 C stats requires that a trial court, in determining whether to terminate one's parental rights, must consider, one, whether the child has substantial relationships with his or her family, two, whether it would be harmful to that child to, three, sever those ties. The statute presents three issues. Only one is before the court in this case today. The state asserts in its brief that this case should be decided under the first prong of the statute, whether the trial court's findings that there were substantial relationships between the twins and their grandmother was erroneous. That issue, however, was not raised at the Court of Appeals, was not contested at the Court of Appeals, and one in which the Court of Appeals never ruled. And it also is the type of issue that this court will not generally review.
Ms. Abbott, let me tell you one of the things that bothers me. Do you agree that this should be remanded?
That's correct. Court?
Doesn't everybody agree it should be remanded to the trial court?
Everybody agrees that it should be remanded to the trial court, but everybody's positions on what the remand should be is different, I believe.
And so you think that's sufficient to have an adverse decision? I mean, you all agree it goes to the same court. You just disagree as to the nature of
I don't think we all necessarily agree that it goes before the same trial judge.
I understand that. You know there's a case pending on that point.
Correct. But we're asking for a specific ruling from this court that will guide the trial court when this case is remanded. If I can continue.
Yes.
The guardian ad litem in his brief characterizes the case as presenting the factual issue of whether a legal severance of the birth family relationships would be harmful to the twins. But the Court of Appeals did not rule that a severance would not be harmful. Rather, it held that no severance would occur in this case. It was on that issue, whether a severance would occur in this case, that this court accepted review. And it's on that narrow issue that we allege the Court of Appeals erred. Under the Court of Appeals decision on remand, the trial court would be precluded from considering what harm may come to the children because it ruled that no severance occurred in this case. There would be no cause to determine the harmful effects of a severance on the children. It is our position that in order terminating parental rights to a child would, as a matter of law, sever the relationship between the child and his or her biological family within the meaning of 42.4263C, where the petition for TPR was a predicate to adoption by a non-relative. The relevant facts are pretty straightforward in this.
Well, then you're reading several relationship to mean legal relationship.
Exactly.
And then you're saying, I assume, that the legal relationship is severed when there's a termination of parental rights and an adoption.
Right, and everybody agrees that a legal severance occurs. However, the Court of Appeals precludes the discretion of the trial court on remand to make further findings about the harmful effects of a severance, because the Court of Appeals ruled that because the adoptive resource testified she would allow some contact between the biological family and the twins, that no severance would occur. The Court of Appeals treated the issue as a factual issue rather than a legal issue.
Well, why can't you argue that the statute means both legal severance and emotional severance, or bond severance?
Because that statute, that definition would be in conflict with some other cases that have been ruled on, in particular in Resurgil, where this court ruled that grandparent does not have the right to petition for visitation unless a family court matter is pending. Whereas in this case, we can't ask a trial court to predict the future. What if the relationship between the biological family and the adoptive resource deteriorates and the adoptive resource moves away with the children? That may forever bar my client from seeing her grandchildren again.
Ms. Abbott, isn't the broader issue here whether or not the Court of Appeals was correct when the Court of Appeals said that the trial judge had not made the determination in regard to termination of parental rights based on best interests of the children?
I don't believe that that is correct. I believe that the trial court did not consider all of the factors it should have considered in making its ruling. However, it did hear the testimony of the witnesses, and in its ruling, it did specifically state that it found it was not in the best interest of these twins to have their relationship with their grandmother severed.
Well, didn't the trial judge focus almost completely in his oral decision on the grandmother and how this was going to affect the grandmother and what the grandmother had done to keep the family together, rather than discussing the testimony in regard to the best interests of the children?
He did. And he did, like I just said, indicated that it would be harmful to sever the relationship, but he did focus a lot of his attention on the grandmother. I believe on a remand, based upon the facts in this case, he could issue appropriate findings of facts and conclusions of law that would uphold the decision he originally made.
Is your position that this case should go back to the same trial judge?
Yes, it is. For further findings of facts and conclusions of law. And we are not asking it to be remanded for any further testimony or any sort of new trial. The relevant facts in this case are pretty straightforward. One, the twins have a substantial relationship with their grandmother, Margaret H., as found by the trial court. Two, if the petition for TPR were granted, the twins would be adopted by Deborah G. And three, Deborah G. testified that if she adopted the twins, she would allow, at essence, in her discretion, some visitation with the biological family.
Could the trial court enter a judgment that is going to terminate parental rights, that if the child is adopted, that a condition of the adoption, whether it be by the foster mother or somebody else, the condition of the adoption be that there be reasonable visitation by the grandmother?
No, Your Honor, that is not, there is no state statute that allows that.
Is there a state statute that disallows it?
I don't believe there's a state statute that disallows it, but I think most trial courts really do look down upon ordering that type of scenario based upon the adoption statute, which severs all ties to the biological family and allows the biological family and allows the adoptive parent to make all decisions regarding the children.
Well, we've had cases, at least one case, where you had a biological mother. The mother allowed another person to become very close to the child and bond with the child, and the mother then said, no more visitation by you. Out. And the court said, well, where the parent allowed this bonding, the child did bond, and it would not be in the good interest of the child, best interest of the child to sever this relationship. We allow visitation. That wasn't even a blood relative.
And I'm sorry, I did not hear the last part of
that. Was not a blood relative. The blood a non-blood relative who had had a long-standing connection with the child was allowed visitation despite the biological mother's wishes to the contrary.
I believe that would put undue restraint upon both the adoptive parent in this case and the biological grandmother. If visitation is ordered, what does that mean? Do they both have to reside in Wisconsin from now on? Do they have a choice to move to a different state? How does that
handle all that by continuing jurisdiction and pressing you to because I gather it's your position that in the adoption situation the court would not have the power, should not have the power to condition the adoption on visitation by somebody else.
That is my position.
Okay.
And the testimony here, as I recall, the two experts testified basically that it was in the best interest to maintain this relationship with the grandmother, right?
That is my recollection.
So that was the testimony that Judge...
Right. The psychologist testified that a severance of the relationship with the biological family could be detrimental to these children and not in their best interests. In order to uphold the Court of Appeals' conclusion that no severance would occur by a termination followed by adoption by a non-relative, this court would have to distinguish or overrule two of its own prior cases, as well as one Court of Appeals' decisions. As set forth at pages 19 to 23 of my brief, the opinions of this court in Inri Sergio and Inri Brandon SS and the decision of the Court of Appeals in Inri Jeffrey AW all recognize that a TPR followed by adoption by a non-relative severs the relationship between a child and his or her natural family as a matter of law. Neither the state nor the guardian ad litem suggest a way in which these cases can rationally be distinguished. In fact, at page 20 of its brief, the state writes, the case law is clear that a termination of parental rights severs the legal relationship between a child and their biological family. The guardian ad litem likewise acknowledges at page 29 of his brief that a termination of parental rights severs the legal relationship and would sever it between the twins and the birth family. While acknowledging that a severance would occur, the state and the guardian ad litem attempt to argue that the Court of Appeals holding that no severance would occur would not limit the trial court's discretion on remand, and that is simply inaccurate. For example, at page 21 of its brief, the state writes that a trial court analysis of whether an actual relationship exists and whether it will continue to exist is a proper avenue to explore. Of course, it's a proper avenue to explore. It goes to whether the severance would be harmful to the children. The guardian ad litem recognizes this in his brief at pages 30 to 31 when he writes, the evidence regarding the adoptive mother's intentions to continue the birth family relationships will still be relevant to the issue of whether it would be harmful to legally sever these relationships. Unfortunately, the Court of Appeals decision precludes the trial court from even considering that. It can't consider whether the effects of its order might be harmful because under the Court of Appeals interpretation, no severance occurs.
What language in the Court of Appeals decision is that you object to?
If I can just grab that decision.
It's in your appendix at 1, the following.
The language that I object to is at appendix, in my appendix, page 7, and also page 7 of the decision. The trial court's oral decision, the point was conceded by all, including Deborah G. Significantly, the trial court's focus on what we have denominated as point one in its expressed rationale is on its face wrong. No one, not Deborah G., not any of the psychologists, not any of the social workers, and not even the grandmother opined that either termination or continued placement with Deborah G. would sever the twins' relationships with their blood relatives. Thus, absent some support in the record, and we perceive none, the trial court's apparent assumption that the twins' relationships with their blood relatives would be severed is clearly erroneous.
You think that's a matter of law, wrong?
I believe that's a matter of law and not a matter of fact. And I believe that the Court of Appeals treated it as a matter of fact.
As a matter of law, the relationship is severed.
Correct. And so, regardless of who testified to what at the trial, if the trial court would have ordered a termination of parental rights, the relationship is legally severed, regardless of the intentions of anyone, any of the parties involved in the case.
Assuming that to be true, then, what is the meaning of the term substantial relationship contained in 48.426 sub 3c? Does that focus on the legal relationship of the parent or biological family to the child, or something broader than that?
Well, we're contending that the term relationship in that statute is ambiguous, and when terms are ambiguous, you can turn to a dictionary or definitions. And we believe that the term relationship in that statute should be construed to mean relationships with families, not informal dealings or things of that nature.
Answer my question. My question is, does that term refer only to an inquiry into the harmfulness of the severance of the legal relationship or the relationship in a broader sense? What did the legislature intend?
We are proposing to the legal relationship.
So the court focuses only on whether there's a legal loss to the child or whether there's a loss in a broader sense?
Well, whether in a legal sense.
Why? How would that be right?
Because if the child's relationship is terminated, a substantial relationship with its parents or grandmother is legally severed, then that relationship is, I guess I'm getting unfocused. In our brief, we did discuss the term relationship, and we discussed what that meant. And we asked this court, and we indicated in our brief that there is no definition of relationship in the statute.
Counsel, does it boil down to really focus on sever, legally sever or factually sever?
That is our position, legally severance or factually sever the relationship. And we contend that it legally severs the relationship.
Well, you, in 48.426C, the first factor that the trial court has to determine is whether the court has substantial relationships with parents or other family members. What do you think that means? It's obviously not a legal relationship because, by definition, a parent has a legal relationship.
connection between family members, obligations, and other legal consequences, the right to child support, if that were to be the case, the right to emotional support, the right to an education.
Okay, now, okay, child support, that's a legal relationship. Education may be a legal relationship in terms of paying, but you said emotional support, that's not a legal relationship. So if you have a parent who has a close relationship in terms of seeing the child often, even though there may be a whole series of issues and problems, that there is an emotional bond, like the mother, the grandmother here.
Right.
Can't take care of the child day to day, but seems to have a bond.
Since the term is not defined, I contend that actually both definitions would fit. It can be limited to an emotional connection with the family without regard to the rights, the obligations, and other legal consequences of the family relationship.
Then you have a second clause that says, and whether it be harmful to the child to sever these relationships.
Correct.
Now, if I've heard you right, on that part of it, the definition of sever these relationships, you're looking at legal.
Both legal and the emotional connections.
And here you would have a severance of the emotional connection because as a matter of adoption, the adoptive parents could sever.
That would be correct. But the Court of Appeals ruled no severance occurs in this case. And that's our main issue.
Now, ordinarily, it's my understanding that when you have a termination of parental rights, you don't terminate until you do have an adoptive possibility.
That's correct. Right.
Do you ever terminate without an adoption?
No, you do need a legal resource in order to terminate a parental right.
So your position then is that the statute means whenever the child has a substantial emotional relation, I'm just going to cut the legal there for the moment because by definition they all have legal. Where the child has a substantial emotional bonding or relationship with the parent or other family members, and whether it be harmful to the child to legally sever these relationships by means of adoption.
Right.
That's how you're reading that statute.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Let's see if I can find my place here. As I recently discussed, value in a child in maintaining the legal status of family with his or her biological relatives, as I talked about, potential child support, financial considerations. And there also could be a real psychological value to a child in maintaining the status of a family with his or her natural relatives. In this case, these boys are twins, and this case began when they were 4 years old. They're now 7. I find it, and I believe testimony at trial indicated that it would be detrimental to terminate their rights to their family based upon the fact that they know that they have this family, that they visit this family, they stay with this family, and to disconnect them from this family altogether would be harmful. As anyone here, if they were disconnected from their family at age 7 after having substantial contact with that family, would be probably emotionally scarred from that.
What about the other side of the coin? What about the fact that if parental rights are not terminated, that apparently their relationship with the foster adoptive, potentially adoptive mother would be severed, would be terminated? Isn't that going to be a problem for the children also?
I think that may pose some harm to the children. When this termination of parental rights case began, it was the children had been placed with the pre-adoptive mother for a very, very short period of time when the state filed its termination of parental rights case. Unfortunately, due to the clogging of the court's calendar, we didn't get before the trial court for approximately 8 months to have this trial occur. So, yes, they have bonded with their pre-adoptive mother, and they're in sort of a custody battle, as I would describe it. They're 2 weeks with the mother, with the grandmother, and they're 2 weeks with the pre-adoptive mother at this time. So I do agree with the court that that would have some effect on the children in terms of their emotional bonding to the adoptive mother.
When was the petition to terminate parental rights filed, to your recollection?
To my recollection, it was filed in March of 1997. March of 1998.
Well, the facts I'm gleaning from the Court of Appeals opinion indicates that placement with Deborah G. was in March of 1998.
Right, and I'm saying that I made a mistake. The petition was filed in March of 1998.
And placement occurred in March of 1998 also?
That's correct.
So the termination of parental rights petition was filed within days or weeks of the placement?
That's true.
So at that time there was no bonding?
Excuse me?
At that time there was no bonding.
That's my position. And now I see my red light is on. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Abbott. You will have 5 minutes in rebuttal. The next half hour is going to be divided between Michael Bruno, who's the guardian ad litem, and Ms. Potashewicz. Am I even close? Thank you. You are the guardian ad litem, sir?
Yes. Yes, I am. Justice Abramson. And I'd like to thank you all. It is indeed an honor to appear before this court. May it please the court. I am attorney Michael Bruno. I'm the guardian ad litem for Daryl and Durrell. Our office, Legal Aid Society of Milwaukee, has represented these children since they were approximately 2 months of age, back in April of 1993, and they just turned 7 last month. Although our briefs devoted a lot of space and efforts to the issue of the definition of relationship in Section 48.426 sub 3 sub C, the ultimate consideration of what I'm going to call Factor C is the harm to the children, the potential harm to the children that might be done upon a termination of parental rights. And it's undisputed that a termination of parental rights and adoption finally terminates the legal relationship between the birth children, between the children and the birth family. Section 4892 makes this clear, and case law subsequent to that also affirms this fact. I would submit that the real issue in this case is a factual issue, and that is, what is the potential of harm to these children by virtue of a termination of parental rights? When a trial court evaluates under Factor C, the relationship between the children and birth family, it's done as a predicate to the ultimate issue in that case, whether there would be harm to the children resulting from a termination of parental rights. For instance, if a child has absolutely no relationship with the birth family, Factor C is going to weigh in heavily in as long as the other factors mandate this, will weigh in heavily in favor of a termination of parental rights. If there's a significant relationship, if a child is living with an aunt and an uncle and has been for a long time and it's a beneficial relationship and a termination of parental rights petition is filed to place the child in an adoptive home, obviously that's the other end of the spectrum. Factor C would militate against.
So you agree that this has to go back to the trial court?
Yes.
And what is it that the trial court is going to do? And do you have any objection on the basis of what you just said to the language that Ms. Abbott quoted from the Court of Appeals decision?
No, I don't have any objection to that language. And I think that because of the passage of time and events, I believe that the trial court would have to engage in a full hearing. And I believe that the evidence will be even stronger upon a full hearing that an adoption is in the best interest of the children.
Okay, but do you agree that that potentially the grandmother will be can be cut out entirely?
Yes, I think the law is clear that her statutory right to have visitation after a termination of parental rights would be cut off.
Well, then how can you support this statement? Thus, absent some support in the record, and we perceive none, the trial court's apparent assumption that the twins' relationships with their blood relatives would be severed is clearly erroneous. You don't agree with that.
I think that the fact what the Court of Appeals there is rendering is an opinion upon the facts of this case. The facts of this case were such that the adoptive parent had exhibited a real commitment to continuing the birth relationships. Although I agree that the legal relationships would continue, I think that if the
and
court...
And the court cannot force the adoptive parent to give the grandmother visitation. Is that right?
After an adoption, that's correct.
Okay.
That is correct. I think that if the Court of Appeals would have worded its opinion in a little bit different fashion, if it would have said that the trial court's error was in an erroneous conclusion of fact that there would be harm to the children by virtue of the severance of the legal relationships, and that error was because the factual record was undisputed that the adoptive parent intended on continuing those relationships and valued those relationships, I don't think that we would be here discussing whether or not what I think of the red herring as to whether or not there's a...
Please put it differently. So you think a trial court can rely on a future adoptive parent to say, I'm going to continue visitation, that the trial court can rely on that and say, since there's a strong emotional bond with the maternal grandmother, which would be detrimental if it was severed, but it's not going to be severed because she's made a promise. The new adoptive mother has made a promise, and I'm relying on that promise. Therefore, I'm terminating parental rights.
Yes, I think that that goes into the trial court's determination of the risk of harm to the children. And I think that in the petitioner's brief on page 27, she acknowledges the relationship here between the first clause of sub C and the second clause of sub C when she states that it is up to the trial court in the exercise of its discretion to decide whether risking destruction of that relationship is in the child's best interests. Is termed in words of risk. And I think, again, the trial court error here is that it did not assess this as a risk. The trial court's error was that it assumed that all of the visitation and all contact would cease, and then upon that erroneous assumption then made an error in concluding that there would be harm to the children and denying the termination of parental rights.
Counsel, I want to stay focused on that language in the opinion because your opposing counsel, in essence, says it's because of the wording of that sentence that we are here. The sentence, as just read, is the trial, the Court of Appeals is saying, the sentence in part says, the trial court's apparent assumption that the twins' relationship with their blood relatives would be severed is clearly erroneous. Now, you've just said that there's no doubt that there is a legal severance of the relationship. Is that correct?
That's correct. There's no doubt of that. And I think the Court of Appeals there is referring to what I have called in my response to the petition for review a de facto severance of the relationships. In other words...
How do you have to... At first blush, to be honest, I read it as would be... I interpret it as would be legally severed
or would be severed is clearly erroneous. I mean, and I think, well, it is going to be legally severed. Everyone concedes that. The law is clear that it's going to be legally severed. So how would you rewrite that phrase to make it what you understand to be consistent with the law? How should we rewrite that part of the sentence to be consistent with the law?
I would have rewritten it.
Take a look at it. Do you have it before you? The reason that I'm focusing on that is because I think that that really, for me anyway, focuses the issue. It's the red brief. Okay. It's page 8 of the Court of Appeals decision. Paragraph, last two lines of that top paragraph. On page 8.
I would have written this, that
the trial court's apparent assumption, that's what I'm referring to. How do you rewrite that to make it consistent with your understanding of the law?
I would have written this as the trial court's apparent assumption that the actual relationships between the twins and their blood family would have been severed after a termination of parental rights and after the legal severance of their, and after the termination of the birth family's legal rights to enjoy the relationship was clearly erroneous. I guess, again, the way I would have rewritten it in quite a bit different way, I would have stated that the trial court's erroneous conclusion of fact was that there would be harm to the children by virtue of the legal severance of the relationships.
But that's very different than here. I mean, we're not talking about, in this sentence, harm to the children or best interest of the children. I mean, not in this sentence.
Couldn't you use a better word than severance?
I think there's terminated could have been used. I think severance presumes that they're talking about a legal severance. That is, in fact, what would happen. I think it's clear. But I guess the reason that I characterize it this way is that, again, I think that the real issue here is the harm to the children.
Okay, so why don't we rewrite the sentence as follows. The trial court erred in that it failed to consider that, it's a long sentence, although the child's relationship with the blood relatives is legally severed, the trial court failed to consider, in considering the best interest of the child, that a promise was made here that the adoptive mother would not, let's do it positively, failed to consider that the adoptive mother promised to continue the relationship between the child and the blood relatives. And therefore the trial court must, in making its determination about termination of parental rights, has to put into the mix the unenforceable but good faith promise of the adoptive mother. That's your position, isn't it?
That's my position, but I think I would have expanded even beyond that. I would ask the trial court.
It would have indicated, make it a longer sentence.
I would have indicated that the trial court should also consider all of the evidence that supported a finding that the promise, that the words of the adoptive parent was sincere, it was well thought out on her part, that there was a real commitment to continuing the birth family relationship. There was evidence on the record that the adoptive mother had continued the relationship, had allowed visitation between the children and their previous foster mother, because she understood that the children were angry about being moved from that foster mother with who did not want to adopt and with whom they had lived for approximately 3 years. She also continued the children in the same school. She provided transportation for the children to have visitation with their birth family. Dr. Emily, in his evaluation of the adoptive mother and the grandmother, felt that her belief in that she valued the birth family relationships that the children had with their siblings and with other relatives. And Dr. Emily also felt that his belief was based upon the fact that Deborah had indicated that she would do whatever was in the best interest of the kids, despite the pain that might result to her.
So it's sincere good faith, demonstrated commitment, but legally unenforceable promise.
But legally unenforceable, and there's no...
You know, these children are very fortunate to have at least two people who want them. You know, a lot of children have none.
This is true. And they have a birth family that has been interested in them. However, they have not been able to care for them for many years. And all that time that these children were in foster care, they're developing relationships during that period of time. The psychologists that testified indicated that the reaction attachment disorder that these children suffered from was because of the multiplicity of placements. And they testified that harm was more severe and was of more risk to the children than the harm that may occur by severance of the relationships. They said, both of the psychologists testified that it was the harm of continuing the impermanence and instability in these children's lives that was more of a threat to these children. Dr. Brozek, who was their therapist, had testified that another move for these kids, and again, this was when she testified, this was approximately 8 months after they had been in the home, but she testified that another move for these children would be very traumatic and it would upset them once again.
Is there anything else about this trial court, this Court of Appeals decision you would change now that you got the chance?
No, I wouldn't change anything. I think I might have gone into more detail as to some of the other facts of record that supported a termination of parental rights based on the
fact. But you're not asking this court to terminate parental rights. You were asking it to go back.
Yes, I think that the appropriate thing to be done here. In fact, what I've asked this court to do is to find that this basically is a factual issue here, and that this is not a there's no legal issue before this court. What I've asked this court to do is to find that the petition for review should not have been granted. I'm doing that so that this case can get back to the trial court as expeditiously as possible, so these children can be permanently placed as quickly as possible. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Counsel? You're representing the state of Wisconsin in this, on your special request to do that.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Janet Protasewicz, and I'm an assistant district attorney in Milwaukee County. I do represent the state of Wisconsin in this matter. I think I am the only one who does not agree that this case needs to be remanded, and I am asking that this court reverse the decision of the trial court and grant the petition to terminate parental rights, or in the alternative, to affirm the decision of the Court of Appeals. I have prepared some remarks, but I would like to stray from those remarks for a minute or two to respond to the question that the Chief Justice has asked both counsel, and that is whether or not a condition of adoption can be reasonable visitation. Contrary to the opinion of the guardian ad litem and Ms. Abbott, I think that with the guidance of this court, reasonable visitation can be a condition of an adoption. I think that grandparents, or I know that grandparents already have visitation rights under three separate sections of the Wisconsin statutes. That's 767 when there's an action affecting the family, 880 when there's a deceased parent, and more recently in 48925, which is the step-parent adoption statute. So I think that with some guidance from this court...
Well, do any of this specifically cover this case?
I beg your pardon?
Do any of these three statutes specifically cover this case?
No, they don't.
Okay.
And I believe that the case that the court was referring to earlier when you questioned Ms. Sabat about non-relative was the Holtzman case.
Yes.
And looking at the Holtzman case, which basically said that the trial court may have equitable powers outside of what's delineated in the statute, I think that the trial court probably could grant some reasonable visitation rights. The problem that we've been having in unraveling this riddle is that after the Holtzman case came out in 1998, the Court of Appeals rendered the Jeffrey A.W. case, which is very similar to this case on the facts with a grandparent and a visitation question, and the Court of Appeals denied the grandparent's request for visitation and saying that it was distinguished.
Counsel,
but I'm sorry.
Why should you said can a condition of adoption be reasonable visitation with grandparents? Why should we wade into that issue that is presently pending before the United States Supreme Court with all of those knotty variations on this theme?
Well, I think the case that's in front of the United States Supreme Court is very different. That case is interpreting an incredibly broad statute, which is talking about relatives or non-relatives.
Yes, but it deals with the fundamental right of parents not to have interference with visitation. And that was as I read the parts of the majority opinion, that's what they were...
Correct. And I think that basically there is the constitutional right of parents not to have interference in the way that they raise their children. But then under certain circumstances, there are exceptions to that.
Yeah. And I don't mean to argue that was a 5-4 decision of the Washington Supreme Court. I don't mean to argue the merits of that. I'm just saying, why would we make a proclamation on that given the current pendency of that action?
Because these children are in desperate need of permanency, and this case needs to be resolved.
Why would we reach out and make a legal determination on an issue that isn't before us? That is, can a condition of adoption be reasonable visitation?
Because there's... in the Wisconsin state statutes, and I think that this would give guidance to the trial courts across the state. This issue comes up on a fairly regular basis where children do have ties with their biological family, especially older children who know their biological family members. And I am basically responding to the Chief Justice's question, which in my mind gets very close to the heart of the matter in this case.
But those statutes you've just conceded do not apply.
Those statutes don't specifically apply, but basically what they are a carving out of exceptions to the basic rule that parents have the right to raise their child any way they want, and to the basic case law, which states that parents don't have to allow visitation with their children with anyone. And those three statutes have carved out little exceptions to that basic rule. And what I'm saying is based on the Holtzman case, where the court basically said that it has equitable powers when it believes that visitation under certain circumstances may be appropriate outside of the statute, that contrary to what the other counsel believe, I believe that if the necessary factors are shown, that a court could, upon a determination of best interest of a child, render a decision where they agreed that reasonable visitation should be ordered.
I don't think that's a policy matter for the legislature.
I think it's a policy matter. but I think that this court has the authority to give some guidance, and I also think it's long recognized in common law that the courts may look outside of the statutes to make a determination of what is in the best interest of the citizens of the state.
Well, it would even have to be an expansion council of Holtzman.
Yes.
I remember Holtzman had some very distinct factors.
Right.
That may or may not be applicable here. You'd have to expand even on Holtzman. But if I understand your position, is that you think you agree with the guardian ad litem in the sense that the trial court erred because it did not consider the sincere good faith commitment perhaps legally enforceable, perhaps not, of the adoptive parent, that the parent would not sever the
right.
emotional tie.
Right. I think the trial court should have at least evaluated that and judged the credibility of the foster parent. The psychologist in the case also testified, when I asked him a question of whether or not he believed the foster parent, that he believed that it was her plan to continue visitation based on the fact that she consistently put the children's needs in front of hers, was taking the children to see the former foster parent, was providing the transportation for the visitation between these children and their maternal grandmother, which had not begun in earnest until this petition for termination of parental rights was filed.
So I gather that really the cutting edge difference between you and the grandmother's position is the grandmother says, hey, it can be cut, emotional ties can be cut, and therefore the judge ought to proceed on the premise that I have no protection, and children have no protection.
Right.
Therefore, that would be the premise the judge would proceed on
that
in
the
determining termination of parental rights.
That the grandmother has no recourse? Is that
right.
what you're saying? Correct.
And that your position is that the trial court should consider the commitment of the adoptive parent.
Correct.
Which may or may not be enforceable.
Correct.
It's an open legal question.
At this time, yes.
At this time. And what do you think the Court of Appeals is saying?
I think the Court of Appeals basically said that there was no evidence to the contrary, even from the grandmother, that the actual relationship was going to be severed.
So you'd read in actual relationship.
Correct.
Not legal relationship.
Correct, because I think everyone agrees the legal relationship is severed.
So you're saying that the trial court's apparent assumption that the twins' actual relationship with their blood relatives would be severed is clearly erroneous. So that's what you have to leave in there.
Correct.
Is it your belief that there was no evidence, if you interpret it in that fashion, is it your belief there was no evidence to sustain that kind of finding of fact?
I'm sorry, can you explain what kind of finding of fact?
I recall the testimony regarding a strained relationship.
Yes.
Isn't that part of the equation, too? I mean, if there is evidence that there's a strained relationship, it can't be clearly erroneous, is what I'm asking.
Well, the evidence about the strained relationship was adduced when Deborah was on the stand and she was asked how her relationship with the grandmother was. She stated that it was strained, and then she went on to expand that it was because she did not, quote unquote, feel welcome in the grandmother's home. And there's obviously a deal of animosity going on in this case at this point. And my impression is that the foster mother is making an incredibly good faith effort to keep the visitation going, make sure that the boys are happy, do what's in their best interest. But with this litigation pending, is not feeling entirely welcome when she's transporting the children to the grandparents' home.
I'd further like to say that in this case, the trial court did not consider five of the six factors that it needs to consider
in making a determination of whether or not to terminate parental rights. And the one factor that it did consider that we have been talking about, it considered incorrectly. The standard that the trial court must use to make a determination of whether or not to grant a TPR petition is the best interest of the child. And this is spelled out in 4801, and specifically in 48426 sub 2. The court is to look at all six of the factors that are delineated in subsection 3, but it's not to be limited to those factors. My interpretation is that when the court is making a decision of this gravity, that they should look at all information available prior to making this decision. I don't want to spend my time going over what those factors are because I think everyone knows what they are. But in light of the fact that I'm asking the court to outright reverse the decision of the trial court, and because this is so fact-based, I would like to indicate that stability and permanence is in the best interest of these children. This litigation has been going on for almost 2 years. The children's lives are in flux, and I think this court is able to do an outright reversal because the material facts in this case are undisputed.
But that would essentially substitute our discretion for the trial courts, wouldn't it? I mean, if what you say is true, and based upon this record, it's a three-paragraph oral decision that spends the entire time on feelings of the grandmother,
right,
and nothing else. Wouldn't we, under those circumstances, simply say that this was an abuse of discretion because it reflects no consideration of the other factors that the circuit court is duty-bound to consider under the statute in order a new hearing?
I hope you won't. I know that this court certainly can and most likely will do that, but there is case law which indicates that the court can do an outright reversal, and that was in the TPR to TRM case where the options that the appellate court has include a reversal. Also, in the TPR of Michael I.O. case, which was decided in 1996, the court did an outright reversal on a termination of parental rights case based on the evidence that is in the record. The evidence in this case is mostly undisputed. All the material facts are undisputed. The children are in desperate need of permanency in their lives. I think that based upon the information that is before this court and that is contained in the record, the court has the authority, and I'm asking the court to do an outright reversal. Just briefly, the children are in a home which is strongly committed to adoption. They have greatly improved since being placed with Deborah G. Daryl consistently refers to his foster mother as his mom. Darrell sees her caring and attentive. He loves her. He believes that she loves him. Neither of these boys see their grandmother as nurturing and supportive. They were separated from their mother at the age of 1 month. There's no evidence in the record that they ever knew their father. Their foster mother understands their need for stability. The condition of these children has changed and improved since they've been placed with Deborah. They're more organized, they're more settled, and they receive individual attention. As all the parties, I think, agree, another big change, or at least Mr. Bruno and I agree, placement with their grandmother would be disruptive to them. And because the material facts are undisputed, they point to the inescapable conclusion that the TPR decision should be reversed. I think that the parties, or at least the court, I hope agrees that the trial court centered its analysis on two factors, one being the best interest of the grandmother, and second, that its analysis of 48-426-3C mandated that the TPR petition be denied. Clearly the standard is the best interest of the children, and none of us dispute that. And then I believe that the analysis of 48-426-3C is incomplete, was not the product of rational and reasoned thought. The relationship between these children and their grandmother was not substantial, at least at the point that the petition for termination of parental rights was filed. During the 4 years that these children were placed outside of the maternal grandmother's home, she only had contact with them on 12 occasions. In 1996, the permanency plan changed from placement with the grandmother to termination of parental rights, and this spurred her to decrease her already limited visitation. In 1997, she only saw these boys one time. She did not have information from their therapist on how they were doing. According to the social worker, she was not talking to the boys' school to see how they were doing. She did not even know the telephone number of the foster parent where they lived for almost 4 years when they were not living with her. She had no good reason not to have these boys live with her, except explaining to the trial court that she did not have a residence which was large enough for these boys. But she also indicated that she would have been able to rent a place so that the boys could live with her, but instead she chose not to do that. So for all those reasons, I am asking that this court outright reverse the trial court and grant the petition for termination of parental rights.
Thank you, counsel. Ms. Abbott, you have 5 minutes.
Thank you. I strongly disagree with some of the facts as stated by the state and the guardian ad litem in this case. When the assistant district attorney indicated that the grandmother never had any contact with the children's therapist, Ms. Cheryl Brozek, Ms. Cheryl Brozek was hired to assist the children in acclimating to an adoption. And when my client approached Dr. Cheryl Brozek to find out what she needs to do to transition these children back into her home when the termination was denied, Dr. Brozek said, "I cannot see you. That's a conflict of interest for me." So it's not as if the grandmother wasn't attempting to talk with the therapist. The therapist was hired for one specific reason. And with respect to the visitation over the 4 years that the children resided outside of the mother's home, there was testimony at trial, and the testimony was by my client's daughter, Denise G., and she was asked about the frequency of the visits during the time the children were placed outside the home, and she indicated that it was usually every other weekend, that she would pick them up from their second foster home and their third foster home, and then she would take them back on Sunday afternoons. The reason my client, Margaret H., did not do the transporting is because my client does not drive. Every party knew my client did not drive, but Mr. Lockwood, the social worker in this case, testified at trial that he never offered to help transport these children back and forth. So I disagree with those facts as they stand. My client testified that when she first became guardian of these children, she's got five of their siblings. When she first became guardian, a social worker told her apartment was not big enough to keep the children in that apartment. She didn't just decide that on her own. So then, when she attempted to locate an apartment that would be suitable to meet the agency required requirements, she was unable to find one that she could afford. So what she did, on her own, unrepresented by counsel, she decided, "I've got to buy a house." So she did, and it took her a long time. She saved for 4 years. She saved $6,000. She was finally able to put a down payment on a house, and at that time, she believed the children would be returned to her. So it's not as if she made no efforts to have these children returned to her. She was at every court appearance. She's been fighting for these children for 4 years. She was finally appointed counsel at the time that the TPR petition was initiated. So she cares for these children. She loves for these children. She has a large, expanded family. Her daughter, Denise G., as I indicated, is very helpful in helping her raise these seven children that she's now raising. If she didn't care for these children, we wouldn't be at the Supreme Court right now. She wouldn't have even attempted to try to get these children back. She has every intention of raising these children. She focuses in on their homework. The assistant district attorney pointed out that the children are doing much better now that they're placed with Deborah G., but that's a mischaracterization of the facts. The children are placed 2 weeks with Deborah G. and 2 weeks with Margaret H., and they are doing better under both scenarios. Their school reports have come back just as well when they're with Margaret H. as when they're with Deborah G. And Everyone in this family loves these children, and as the court has pointed out, there's a whole book of children that lists these children are for adoption. Their parents haven't been around for years. There's no legal risk associated with adopting these children. And these two children are put in this book, and someone picks them out to adopt them when there's a family who wants them, loves them, can take care of them, and would be appropriate caregivers.
If this goes back to the circuit court, there would necessarily have to be another hearing and new evaluations done because of the staleness of the old information, correct? It's not taking a look at the old record because we've got human lives here and a lot of intervening.
I believe that if this case is remanded for a new trial, these children will be in flux for another year to a year and a half. That's how long it took us to get before the trial court in the first place. I believe that this court should remand this case back to the trial court with instructions that the Court of Appeals was in error when it ruled that no severance would occur, and that was erroneous, and allow the trial court to supplement his findings of facts and conclusions of law as is dictated by the statute.
Based upon what? The old record? When we've had all of these many intervening months and a much different situation now exists, and there may have been changed circumstances in how these children are adjusting?
I'm focusing on the children. Another year and a half.
I don't disagree. I'm focusing on the children, too, and that's why I'm pointing out that the intervening circumstances, which you've just been arguing at great length about what the situation has been since the time of the entry of the circuit court's original order and the present time, and none of that is going to be in the record before the trial court if we send this back, right?
That is correct. But if I may say one last thing, the trial court, when it made its rulings on the facts at the time of the hearing and found that the relationships were substantial. It would be harmful for them to sever them.
So it's a conclusory finding based upon consideration of only one factor. I mean, that's conceded by you.
Yes, I understand that. I'm just asking that this case be resolved as quickly as possible.
Counsel, let me just ask this in a more general way. If this should go back and the trial court has to make a determination of termination of parental rights, as of what time period does the court look at it? Does it look at that as of the year 2000, or does the trial court look at it as of the time the first hearing?
I don't know the answer to that question. I think that's Justice.
The essence of Justice Sykes' question.
Mm-hmm. My red light is on, so I thank the court for listening to me.
Thank all of the counsel on this hearing. Let me say that at 12:20 now, Justice Prosser will speak to the Hillsborough High School, Faith Christian High School and Wanakee High School students, and sitting in the balcony, but they're welcome to come down. Is it Frieden or Frieden? Frieden Lutheran School, 7th and 8th grades of Kenosha. Everyone else is welcome to stay, too. Could counsel approach the bench, please?
No, we've all been there.